A reading this morning is a poem, and it's a piece that I first came on in 1988, 89, and it's become a part of my personal scripture. It's a poem that is attributed to David White, the poet, but he said it was dictated by a Native American elder as an instruction to a young tribal person about how to meet the world. And the name of the poem is Lost. As somebody said, it could also be Found, but the name is Lost. Stand still. The trees ahead and the bushes beside you are not lost. Wherever you are, it's called here, and you must treat it as a powerful stranger. Must ask permission to know it and be known. The forest breathes. Listen, it answers. I have made this place around you. If you leave it, you may come back again, saying, here. No two trees are the same to raven. No two branches are the same to wren. If what a tree or a bush does is lost on you, you are surely lost. Stand still. The forest knows where you are. You must let it find you. From David White, In the Heart Aroused. I think one of the things is not to hear that just as you go, that's a poem about nature and the forest. What if you thought about it as a poem about your world, or about community, or about being present? Stand still. The forest knows where you are. You must let it find you. As we said, it's the first Sunday in December, and I've written before that every year, without exception, and you think I'd learn from it, this time of year, I let December sneak up on me. I'm surprised by holiday music. I looked at the order of service for this morning and what Catherine had submitted that we were singing, and I said to her, I actually walked in the office, and I said, really? This is happening? And yet, it's our order. It's in our order of service every year at this time, every first week in December. But to me, it always seems to start early. I'm surprised by all that holiday music. Everyone is thinking ahead and gearing up for festivities and friends and parties and family visits or trips and talking about sales and shopping. If you don't think calendars are already full, or people are anxious about what's coming, just try to schedule a meeting after Thanksgiving with more than two people. So many times I have begun the month with a talk about being present and mindful, not just mindful of everything that's going on. Mindful. But this year, while it's the same December, it feels very different. Events make it weightier and more real, so that mindfulness has now become more important and actually centrally powerful to me than I've ever felt it before. The holidays actually take on a historical presence. They're not just some passing thing, but they're a message that's trying to speak to us. At the same time, I need to share my sense that's nagged me the whole time of creating it, is that this morning's talk is inadequate to the need at hand. I'm inadequate to the need at hand. The talk just is inadequate, and for that I'm sorry. While at the same time, I realize that any talk is inadequate in this moment, these times. It is then one step, and that is what each of us has, one step at a time. So this is not an inspiring talk. This is a practical talk. But it's about practice that I think is foundational to making a difference, to making our difference in the world. Inspiration you can do, and then it's sort of like a breath. You go off and go, oh, that was great. And you go, whoa, how does that change my life? I will try to do the two things I can do. I'll speak to you from my experience of how I'm moving forward, and then I'll share with you what I think our religious traditions offer, both Unitarian and Universalist, and then the wisdoms from which they emerged. Then perhaps some of those wisdoms and practices can actually help you take hold of your own power so that you might engage and act from and with your own creative life energy. You might find the energy and power to better live and work for openness, for goodness, for aliveness and justice and love. 3 Sundays ago, immediately after Election Tuesday, I shared that I felt very disoriented. The compass of my values and understandings that guide me through life and the larger mysteries of the universe, my religious orientation had just received a severe blow, and the needle of the compass was spinning on the dial. I felt lost and sad and scared. Have any of you ever been hiking and all of a sudden realized that you were lost? Had that feeling where you didn't know where you were? Have you ever lost your bearings? In those moments, what are you supposed to do? What do the wilderness responders tell you to do to prepare for those moments? They tell you, like the poem says, stand still. Stand still. Get reoriented. Don't panic. Assess where you are, and then develop a plan. Don't let all that's happening around you distract you from doing that. So that morning, as part of getting reoriented, we shared our mission statement and our covenant of who we are and how we are to be together. We said, this is the community where we are and where we venture from, just as we began the service this morning. Stand still. Rely on and trust in who you are. We sing the song by Rabbi, what's his name? But it's Return Again. What's his last name? But it's Return Again. Return to who you are. Return to where you are. Return to what you are. And then he says this, born and reborn again. Return again. Returning to myself and my compass has been a central piece of regaining my orientation. It's been a central piece for rebuilding my strength to go forward with direction and determination. I don't do well when I'm feeling so lost and so scared. Or as the woman who cuts my hair said, I was feeling, and she had just dreaded, braided 2 of her strands of hair into dreads, to let the inner woman, angry warrior, out in her. She said, I was feeling miserable. And she said, and I don't do miserable well. My plan for how to proceed is one of concentric circles or ripples moving out. Circles of strength and compassion and outreach. First to take care of healing myself, of regrouping, and then reaching out to family and friends and community, building the strength and understanding to engage in actions and causes that have become even more important and urgent to me in these days and months. As a first step, I have intentionally stepped back from drama and the fear that accompanies it in the hope of awakening more into love and care and creation. I'm doing this in 2 ways. For the most part, I've stayed away from the media. I'm getting back into it a little bit at a time. I actually look at the front page of the New York Times now. I realize that's kind of a baby step. But I am avoiding getting caught up in drama that I can't affect. I'm waiting for it to sort itself out. I hear enough about it and engage it enough from everybody else. And then as much as I can, I push myself to put good, real life in its place. Like I said, I turn it off, turn off the media. Then I try to do things like read. Many of you already do that. I've taken up the guitar again. I cook more. I think of those soulful activities that connect me to life in the world. And I practice mindfulness. When I feel myself getting angry or scared or overly engaged with the drama I cannot affect or change, I think to bring myself back, focus on my breath and the rhythm of my breathing. I use the practice of mindfulness to help ground myself in real life and the scale of me. It's a place to focus. It's a place to gather strength. Right now, there is still some sense of retreat to it, but it is an intentional, strategic retreat with the hope that I will be better able to awake and advance and commit with skillful means and right action, mindful so I can move forward, more alive and clear-eyed, awake and effective, less scared and frightened, less lost. Mindfulness is at the simple center and the simple hope. 9 years ago, I noted that in his landmark book, The Miracle of Mindfulness, Manual on Meditation, Buddhist monk Thich Nhat Hanh uses the term mindfulness to refer to keeping one's consciousness alive, alive to the foundational grounding in which we live and to the present reality. He places his definition of mindfulness in the middle of a story of a parent trying to claim some moment of the present for her or himself in one of those many chaotic, fearful moments that come with raising a child. In typical Zen monk understatement, Thay says, during such times, one's mind is inevitably distracted by other thoughts. And so if one really wants to keep one's consciousness alive, then one must practice right now in one's daily life, not only during meditation sessions. And I have to say right here, when I use the word meditation, don't let the word meditation discount the thought. I wrote then, so don't be distracted by the word meditation, which I now realize from years of experience, most of us will not do, but just add as another should to the list that keeps us from being mindful. And you'll say, I'm sorry, I don't know how to do meditation. All we're saying is just take a moment to return to your breath. But the central word in that quote is alive. Mindfulness brings us out of our chronic worry, out of our fear and anxious drama, and into the present. Our own lived moment of now. It keeps us, quote, from being sucked away into the future and fears of and for the future, where we are incapable of living one moment of life. Mindfulness has a foundational theology of the present. It's that gift of breathing and being alive. Breathing is the foundational presence of being alive. We focus on our breath to return to that foundation and to calm and focus our thoughts and mind. Thich Nhat Hanh says breath is the bridge which connects life to consciousness, which unites your body to your thoughts. Whenever your mind becomes scattered, use your breath as the means to take hold of your mind again. Song 1009 is meditation on breathing. We sing it. When I breathe in peace. When I breathe out love. When I breathe in peace. When I breathe out love. When I breathe in. With the media limited, and my intentional focus on smaller actions that are within my reach, I now find I notice and actually can hear hope and wisdom in the ancient stories of the holidays. They're speaking to us. Christmas is not about a savior fully formed that we're waiting for, but it's the birth of a baby to be raised with all its distractions. And what is it to be raised for? Peace on earth. not peace out there on earth, but as you raise the child, a symbol of goodness born in difficult times. After all, what was happening? Herod wanted to kill him and was looking for him. A child that needs to be rescued and nurtured and raised to realize his full potential. Christmas can remind us to step back, literally give importance to the support of baby steps. Care for our world and community as we would care for a child. Our actions and lives in support are required to make the promise real. Indeed, they are the only thing that ever has. Margaret Mead. I find it helps to think of Jesus as a brown baby. When she spoke 2 weeks ago, Carter Hayward held up that Unitarian Universalists were very humanistic. And then she added, she says, that's in a good way. She says that is the energy and force for justice and love that she associates and in her theology has developed as being God and with God is realized through our actions. God is in us. As Unitarian Universalist President Bill Sinkford said, we are a radically incarnational faith. That means our faith is embodied in how we engage the world, not out there, but how it is lived through us. Literally, it is what we put into practice. It's what we do with our time and our days. Carter shared that when Reverend William Barber preached at her sister's church in Charlotte the Sunday after the election, he referenced the biblical story of Samuel. And Samuel was cast out by the people and then replaced by Solomon on the throne. God told Samuel not to feel rejected. God said the people had not rejected him, they had rejected God, and she would take care of it. My Unitarian Universalist faith hears that as encouragement and a call to keep on being a part of that energy and pull for love and justice and compassion. It's happening with our help. That's how the arc of history is bent. Together, we raise the child. We make the promise of peace on earth, goodwill to all, real. Last week, Reverend Judy reminded us and encouraged us again in the face of her own deepest fears and experiences to focus on our compass and our values. All of us together, she said. She said, because we who are gathered here this morning and in Unitarian Universalist congregations around the world, we are religious progressives covenanted. That is, we've made the promise together as Universalists, all of us. And in our covenant, we affirm the inherent worth and dignity of each and every one of our fellow national and world citizens. We celebrate diversity. We strive to live lives of radical hospitality. We affirm that our world is stronger, brighter, more dynamic and lively when it is radically inclusive, welcoming, and diverse. We affirm that our world is stronger, brighter, more dynamic and lively when it is radically inclusive, welcoming, and diverse. And so, given our shared covenant as individuals and as a community, she says we must find our way, in the words of our Unitarian prophet Theodore Parker, to continue to bend the moral arc of the universe towards justice. And we are together, all of us. We are not alone, and we are with each other. As I look at the holidays, I realize that Hanukkah encourages with the story of freedom and light realized by a few against seemingly overwhelming odds. And solstice brings us back to the intimate relationship of light and dark and life, action, and the power of mindful, intentional retreat in preparation for then a strong, brilliant spring. Stand still. The forest knows where you are. You must let it find you. Reverend Judy gave us a direction, and she called it our path forward from being lost. It is grounded in these particular days and events of this particular November, December. She reminds us that the foundational principle of these and all the world's religious messages is one of compassion. That is, a radical love, not a romantic or attached love, but an expansive love of all as reflections of the mystery and gift of life. We are called, she says, to be reflections of that compassion, to love our neighbors as ourselves, and that means all our neighbors, not just those with whom we agree. That's for everybody. That means all our neighbors, not just those with whom we agree. That goes in all directions. Not just those who are vulnerable, but all. Judy says that all of us gathered here, covenanted together as the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Hendersonville, have a story to write that then can also write us into hope and true community. We religious progressives in Henderson County have a calling to the path of true radical inclusivity, inclusivity of those with whom we disagree. We are all neighbors. And now is the most critical time in our lives to be neighbors, to talk, and even more critically, to listen. Judy calls for engaged dialogue, starting with those with whom we have a connection and a wish to be in right relationship. She says friends and family, starting easy, but starting all the same. I opened the second sermon I ever wrote in my life by saying that we are called to expand our circle of compassion. Right now, the abstract becomes real opportunity for all of us and each of us. Here we have one powerful answer, which we may not like, but to the question that I hear so often, what can I do? I want something to do. I feel helpless. I want something that I feel can make a difference. Give me something to do. Well, here is something you can do. And it is something only you can do. Because you are the only one who can be in dialogue with the people you have connection with. The people you care enough about and who care enough about you to be in dialogue. You're the only one who can be in dialogue with your friends and family. You're sitting there going, but Jim, that's not going to make a difference. Well, let's do the math of the importance of such conversations. Here we share a vision of a world made stronger, brighter, more dynamic and lively when it has helped to be more inclusive, welcoming, and diverse. Over half the people who cast their vote for a presidential candidate showed that they share some version of that vision. Many people who voted differently share some version of that vision too. And they feel they share some version of that vision too. The voices, those voices that understand themselves and as intentionally exclusive, may be in more obvious positions of power now, but they are still in the minority. And they will be increasingly in the minority in the years to come, just by the demographics. The only way they can continue to be in power is if they continue to find ways to separate those of us with inclusive vision from each other and from ourselves. That's the only way they can continue. William Barber calls it the politics of division. We fight against that division every time we have an open dialogue with our neighbors, family, and friends who we think, don't think like we do. That's, as I said, from any direction. Not by fighting policies with them, but by listening and connecting on human rights and decency and common ground. It's easier said than done, but it's right there in front of us at every opportunity. During a conversation in my office this week, a person said, I want to be in dialogue, but I just can't do it. I try, but I react and I lose it. At a dinner party, this person said, was strongly against immigration and making generalities about immigrants that I didn't like, and I didn't respond well. It went downhill from there. I didn't help anything at all, this person said. Another person in the Race Matters discussion shared that they are just too angry right now to even want to be in conversation. But then in our discussions, we were able to frame responses that created those openings for connection, the space for the possible power of compassion and common ground. Like, I'll just try to do it now, thinking about it. I hear that you feel real strongly about that. What's the source of that feeling? You know, what scares you in this other way? What's going on here? Or to say to myself, watch myself being so angry and just go, okay, I got it. I got to wait this out for a little bit before I can engage. But how do we do that in the moment? We prepare for that moment. We prepare for being in the moment. Stand still. Right now. Not for a later world that is to come after you've watched more Rachel Maddow. After you've read more opinion pieces. After you've watch to see what's happening here and there. Stand still. Right now. The practical practice of mindfulness can move us from reaction and fear, from talk to world-changing connection. It is an action we can take to actually make beloved community more than a notion. We can begin to make it real. In 2008, in a talk on mindfulness, I said that the practice of mindfulness is the core practice for right speech and right relationship. Here at UFH, it actually makes our guidelines for right relationship and community possible. It makes them a practice rather than a thought or an imposition. Mindful of mindfulness, we remember to breathe and come back to ourselves before we react, even within ourselves. It's the foundation for being an engaged witness. That is, not being our emotion, as in I'm angry, but remaining connected and being able to come back to yourself watching you feeling your feeling of anger, which is not who you are, but it's what you are feeling. Mindfulness breaks the self-centered cycle of righteousness and blame. Mindfulness helps create room for understanding, and most of all, it enables compassion. And that was almost 9 years ago. The practice is the same. The need and the stakes have become more obvious. Stand still. Get reoriented. Then take your step on our path forward. You are not alone. The energy of connection for love and justice is alive in the world. Remember to breathe. Reverend Judy brought that message on her own. Reverend Carter Hayward did the same and encouraged us that this is in fact the loving energy of God. A month before the election, a small group called Compassionate Congregations, made up of congregations who have joined the Charter for Compassion, led by Charlie and Pam Rogers, met to plan an event for Compassionate Conversations. Just before Thanksgiving, we then met and focused on starting by inviting our friends and family and neighbors, those with whom we have both connection and division, to an opportunity to share together and reach across our divides. It's planned for February. Richard Talley and Eileen Douglas are leading Compassionate Conversations the Thursdays and Fridays after the Race Matters workshop. You can see how much we recognize the need for this. Only 2 to 4 people have attended each session. This December, our mindfulness can be more, is more than a holiday shift. It's a gift that gives us strength and that will help change the world. Dorothy Day, in our hymnals, number 560, says, "People say, what is the sense of our small effort? They cannot see that we must lay one brick at a time, take one step at a time. A pebble cast into a pond causes ripples that spread in all directions. Each one of our thoughts, words, and deeds is like that, concentric circles." Then she says, "No one has the right to feel hopeless. There's too much work to do." I would say no one has the right to feel hopeless for a long time. For a long time. There's work because, not there's too much work, but because there's work that each of us can do. And because we can do it, we must do it. Stand still. The forest knows where you are. You must let it find you. Remember to breathe.